In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about lessons learned from Unbounce's 5 split tests across 2.3 million exit overlay visitors. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 335. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, sir?
Well, we are in sunny Las Vegas as people are listening to this. And right now outside, it is raining.
Is it supposed to rain on Tuesday?
No, I'm still in New England. We're recording a week and early. Come on, man. Get with the program.
We're time warping here. Yeah, so we record just a few days early, and I take off for Vegas in a couple days. And it's supposed to be, what, 70s and 80s? Pretty sunny there?
Yeah, I think I saw like 84 or 85, something like that last week when I looked. So
yeah. It'd be nice. I'm looking forward to getting out and seeing the folks, you know, seeing the speakers, meeting the new speakers and hanging out with people who we haven't seen for six to 12 months. It's always exciting to kind of gear up for that.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting this time around, just trying to keep up and pace ourselves for the two conferences. I know that in years past, even like every single year without fail, my voice starts to fail at about the second or third day. So we're going to have to be a little careful about that.
I agree. The good thing is we're not emceeing the starter edition, so we should have less talking, although you're doing a talk there, so you really are going to need to keep your voice going.
Yeah, my talk is the last slot on the last day, so 4 or 5 days of talking, and then hopefully my voice it will still stay with it.
Indeed. On my end, not too much new this week. I wanted to look at a couple of recent iTunes reviews, and we're up to 517 worldwide iTunes reviews. This one, I love this subject, best podcast ever, from John Turner, and he says, best podcast for anyone looking to start selling software or a SaaS product. Then we have Ray 223, who says, the oldest and the best. Thanks, Rob and Mike, for all the insights. Keep up the great work. And we have another from Abordvik from Denmark, and he says, if you're considering having a startup, listen in here. Really appreciate these reviews. If you haven't left us an iTunes review, it goes a long way towards helping us reach new audiences, continue to grow the show, and frankly, just keeps us motivated and keeps us from crying ourselves to sleep at night. I know, Mike, you often pull up the reviews and read them to feel good about yourself, right? Oh, just me?
I think it's just you, yeah.
Just me, yeah. Cool. So let's dive into the topic this week. We're going to be talking through an article that is on Unbounce.com's blog. And the title of the article is Lessons Learned from 2,345,864 Exit Overlay Visitors. And what they did is they ran split tests and some observational tests, which we'll talk about in a second. They ran 5 of them over the course of 2 years, and it's about 2.3, 2.4 million visitors during that time. And so they just outline the tests they ran and the results you would expect and then what actually happened. And I like how detailed this post is, and I like that a lot of the assumptions, some of the assumptions that we will make, we know when I say the split test, you're going to think, I know which one's going to win. And sometimes that's correct, and then other times it's not. And so it's kind of a fun walkthrough of people who really, you know, are obviously doing a lot of pretty sophisticated testing.
Do you think that that's an exact number or just kind of a ballpark estimate of the 2,345,864?
I think they went into Google Analytics, you know, and just pulled up the number from the date of the first split test until today or whatever. So I bet it's pretty exact.
So one of the things we wanted to mention before we kind of dive into this particular episode is the fact that there's a certain minimum threshold that you kind of have to be at in order for split testing like this to work. And I think, Rob, you said kind of the minimum that you would even consider doing these types of split tests is when you get to about 30,000 uniques a month, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I were talking before the show and I ran some loose math and said, all right, let's say these guys have 2.4 million unique visitors to their blog over the course of this 2-year thing, which is what they're indicating, right? It's approximate. So back of the napkin, 24 months, 2.4 million is about 100,000 visits a month or visitors a month. And at that rate, you know, think about if you're using exit overlay, you're around 1% maybe to start with in terms of converting people to subscribers. So 1% on 100,000 is about 1,000 new subscribers a month. If you split test, you could very likely get to 2%, and that's 1,000 to 2,000. That moves a needle, right? That's a big deal. As you start lowering the number of visitors you're getting, though, let's think if you have 50,000, that number is going to move from, if you go from 1% to 2%, it's going to move from about 500 to 1,000 new emails a month. And that still, for me, still moves the needle. But as you go, you start dropping down, it's like at 30,000, it's kind of like, well, I'm going from 300 to 600. Yeah, that's cool. That's about as low as I would go. If I think about going to 10,000, where I'm going from 100 to 200 subscribers a month, I actually think at that point, you should be focusing more time on generating traffic rather than split testing the traffic you had. So yeah, my mental math is somewhere in the 30 to 40,000 uniques per month if you're going to, you know, start running experiments like this to actually have it move the needle.
So with that in mind, let's start digging into these experiments and see what they found out.
Yeah, so they say, you know, back in 2015, they launched their first ever exit overlay. So it's an exit intent pop-up that only appears when you try to leave the site. And the idea was they just wanted to collect more email addresses. And when they first started, their conversion rate with the very first one, and it says conversion optimization tips you'll actually use to subscribe to our blog. So it's just, there's no lead magnet, there's no mini course, it's just subscribe to the blog. And they were at 1.25% from the start. And we should probably take a quick break here. Some people hate exit intent pop-ups. Some people love them for, you know, how well they convert. I think Unbounce takes a pretty good approach to it in that they actually like write custom code to ensure that you only see one, even if they have a bunch running in different categories, as we'll hear later. They were very specific to not hose the user experience, because that's the thing that sucks with exit overlays, right? Is if they keep popping up and you're trying to read and you're trying to go to another tab to do something and it pops up. So this is a place where you can listen to these ideas, and you don't have to do this with exit overlays if personally you don't want to. This could just as well be a little drip widget in your lower right. This could be a lead box. This could be embedded form in your website. All the stuff they do can still be applied to that, but they just happen to do it using exit intent.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of applies across the board to a lot of different marketing efforts. If it's something that you're not particularly enthralled with when you come across it, if you look at that and say, oh, I can't stand these things, and you just keep closing them and they keep coming back, I mean, that really tends to turn you off from trying them to begin with. But there's also a difference between your experience on your website and the, you know, the visitor who's coming to your website. So you kind of have to keep in mind what your end goal with these is and whether or not it even makes sense. Because, you know, obviously, like, you're not the one browsing your site, but at the same time, you are also not necessarily representative of the person browsing your site. They may not care nearly as much as you do about it.
So we'll kick into the first experiment here in a second. In the post, they say there are a few testing conditions they want to lay out. Number one, all overlays were triggered on exit, meaning they launched only when abandoning visitors were detected. Number two, they say for these first three experiments, they compared sequential periods to measure results rather than true A/B tests. So they do say this is less scientific, more observational, because they kind of, you know, you run it for 30 days and you run it for 30 days and then you compare the two time periods. They say that when comparing these sequential periods, testing conditions were isolated by excluding new blog posts from showing any of the overlays. Conversion is defined as either completing a form, meaning entering your email, or later on that, try somewhere it's just a click, and we'll get into that later. And lastly, it was from January 2015, ended in November 2016, so almost 2 years. So that's kind of that's setting the stage. The first experiment they ran was to go from their generic signup that I talked about earlier, which just said conversion optimization tips you'll actually use, and as a subscribe to the Unbounce blog button, and to compare that with actually giving away content, right? The hypothesis is if we give away an ebook, that it's going to generate more opt-ins. I think both Mike and I would agree, and most listeners, that you're going to increase your conversion rate if you do that. And so they gave away an ebook called 23 Visual Principles for Designing More Persuasive Landing Pages. And what happened, Mike?
Well, it looks to me like the conversion rate doubled from 1.27% to about 2.65%. Now, the interesting thing here is, you know, you kind of mentioned this up front. This wasn't like a true split test. The duration of this was, for the test itself, was about half the time of the stuff that they had running. So they ran the initial one for 170 days, and then the split test, or the test that they ran, was for 96 days to offer this ebook.
The variant or the challenger, if you will.
Yep. And the conversion rate went from 1.27% to 2.65%. So almost half the time and twice the conversion rate, which kind of translates to the fact that they got about the same number of conversions in half the time, which is, I mean, that's a phenomenal increase, to be honest.
It's really cool. Yeah. So this is good. I feel like this supports a lot of stuff that we've talked about over the years and what you would naturally think. So that's good. Their observation on this is offering tangible resources versus non-specific promises can positively impact conversion rates. So experiment two gets a little more complicated. So they went from their single field, meaning just getting the email address. And, you know, you think about it at this point, they're at a 2.65% conversion rate. They're giving away an ebook. They're asking for an email. They said that data people always spoil the party and that someone internal to Unbounce wanted to get more information, not just the email. So they added three other form fields. So instead of just email, they asked for first name, do you work for an agency, and your company size. And they knew this was going to tank, or they thought it was going to tank conversion rates. And that's exactly what I would have intuited as well. You know, every form field you add from one to two to three and up, you are going to, in almost all cases, have a decrease in conversion rate. And this, you know, once again, confirms that. Take us through the results.
So the results basically went in the opposite direction. And just to point this out, as Rob said at the very beginning, these were all run against different people. So it's not like somebody saw one and then they ended up seeing another one. It's really different segments of their audience that were seeing these. So again, the time periods were different that they used, and it looks like they did not want to run this one for very long just because the results were so bad. But the conversion rate went from on here from 2.65% down to 1.25%.
Yep. Right back to where they started. They're still giving away that resource, but just adding the three fields just tanked them.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty obvious that, you know, I mean, even just looking at it, you probably don't want to fill out that form. If it's an exit intent and you are already inclined to leave, making it more difficult to send them information is just not going to work out in your favor.
I like the quote. The Post author says, "I knew this was for a good reason. Building our data warehouse is important. Still, a small part of me died that day." And then it got worse. They basically, since they added all the fields to it, they had to expand the size of the overlay, and, you know, they just made it bigger so it could hold the form fields. And then they realized that they had made it so big that the size was too large for many people's browser windows. So the overlay only fired two out of every three visits. So not only did they have a lower conversion rate, but they cut their potential audience by a third. So then they redesigned the overlay to make it, you know, smaller and fit. But internally, they decided that even though it was a lower conversion rate, they needed that data. And so now their new baseline is back to 1.25%, which is kind of hard, you know, as someone as a conversion rate optimizer to like make that much of a gain to double and then have to go back, basically take a step back.
It depends on your situation. I mean, because this is one of those places where you really need to make a judgment call about whether you need that data or not and whether you need that data now. And I think in this case, the types of questions that they're asking, I still think that there's places where they could probably get away with not asking certain things, but they went from asking just an email to first name, email, do you work for an agency and your company size? And those additional things really let somebody on the marketing team target down and send the highly specific content to those people. I mean, you're not going to send something about freelancers to somebody who's running an agency with 35 people. So it allows you to target this content that you're sending them and make sure that it is speaking their language and talking directly to their pain points, because they're going to have different pains than a freelancer. And if it's important to have that information now, awesome. But I would also question whether you need to have it on that page. So one of the things that I've seen is that you can do this type of thing where you ask for a very, very limited amount of data. And then on like a next page, you ask for more because they've already kind of bought into the premise at that point. Like, let's say they give you an email address and then it flips to another page and says, hey, thanks for that information. Can you tell us a little bit more info so we can be more specific about the things that we send you? And at that point, you can ask them. And if they don't give it to you, you could either follow up later and try and get it later, or, you know, there's different ways down the road that you can get it. But the root of the question is, do you need that information right now?
Yep. And that's called progressive profiling. If people are curious, there's a really good tool that actually has a tight integration with Drip that does exactly that. And you can set up all these fields and it'll progressively over time, you know, the first time you visit, it'll ask for email. And then the next time it knows it already has your email. So instead of showing nothing, it'll ask for your first name or it'll ask for something else. And it's pretty sophisticated stuff, but that tool is called ConvertFlow, if you're interested. All right, on to the third experiment. This, I like this one. It starts off with the quote, "It seemed like such a great idea at the time," dot, dot, dot. So the third experiment is challenging one overlay like they have now, which is, you know, just the one overlay giving away the ebook with the four form fields versus 10 different overlays. And the 10 different overlays are highly targeted or hyper-relevant to each of their 10 blog categories. So, you know, you can imagine on a blog, you might have categories and they do, like, one of them is split testing and one is copywriting and one is email, one is pay-per-click, one is social. So creating a separate overlay for each of those with hyper-relevant headline, pitch, and all that stuff. And so they did this and they said it took like 3 hours maybe to do this. And then they have a table and the results are kind of crazy. Their email category, the result was a 0.45%. So remember, their baseline is currently at 1.25. So the email one is at 0.45. Their lead gen and content marketing is at 0.85. So those are kind of the bottom end ones. And then their copywriting one is at 3.22%. And their, you know, landing pages and mobile optimization is at 2.46%. So a huge range now. But having that more granular data is super interesting, right? Because now you know you have some big wins and some big losers, and you can just focus more on the losers rather than trying to do it across the board. They only did it for 10 days. They said their conversion rate was a combined 1.36%. So it is slightly higher than the 1.25. They said it eventually crept up to 1.42 after an additional 250,000 views, but it didn't do anything, you know, as much as they had hoped. And so to take a one step back, if you look at, you know, their headline for the copywriting category, they say how to write killer landing page copy versus their conversion optimization category. The headline on that one was how to get started with A/B testing. And then the next one is, you know, UX. And so the headline was the 7 deadly sins of landing page usability. And so I don't know that these were eBooks, and, you know, they kind of say they're not sure that each of these was as effective as that 23 principles of attention driven design eBook they were originally giving away. But that was the idea here. That's how they were trying to target to the specific category.
What I find interesting about this is that they decided to just go back to the baseline and, you know, use the average of all of these, because it seems like there's certain cases where the targeted headlines work a lot better. So, for example, you know, as you said, the copywriting or the campaign strategy and the mobile optimization, those things have a much higher conversion rate. But then if you look at the other ones, you know, as you said, like the email category or the social category, the conversion rates on those is less than 1%. So it makes sense to, at the very least, go back to the baseline. But I kind of question why they didn't decide to go with the specific ones in those particular categories that were overperforming, you know, 2-3 times what the baseline was.
Yeah, I agree. The average is a little weird. I think they're doing that just to kind of give you a general idea, because now that you have this data, what would you expect the next thing to do? It's to keep the ones that are at 2% and above and only try to optimize the low performing categories. And that's exactly what they did. They were going to test new offers across 5 categories that had low conversion rates and reasonable enough of traffic volume, right, to make it worth the test. Because some of these, you know, now that you're getting more granular, it's like some might only get 1,000 views in a month or whatever. And so it's not really worth diving in further than that. What they did is they were then doing resource versus resource. So they were just basically trying a different headline, trying to give away a different ebook.
You know, one thing that comes to mind now that you mentioned that kind of leads into the next experiment that they did, was that if they start changing that and they are running like different types of ads in some categories versus others, then it changes a lot of the math around it. And it becomes even much harder to test that stuff.
Oh, totally. Yep. And so the result of this one, they don't really go into much detail. They just say that they saw a slight improvement in a couple of them. In one of them, they saw a drop off. But in lead gen and content marketing, there was a dramatic uptick and the results were statistically significant. So they're making progress. Now, they had 5 low performing ones and they basically knocked 2 of them out. So really, they just have 3 low performing ones. And so for their 5th and final experiment as of this writing, they wanted to test, you know, lead gen overlays, which is what they've had the whole time with asking for an email or asking for first name and stuff, versus click-through overlays. And so they talk about having an exit intent pop-up that basically has a headline and then a button that says either get the video or get the ebook. They're still giving something away, but then that takes you to a landing page, right? And that landing page has, you know, a lot more text and a lot more conversion-oriented stuff. And so that's what they tested.
So to kind of contrast this particular experiment versus the other ones, what they were doing was they were tweaking headlines, they were asking for more or less information. And in this particular experiment, what they mean by click-through is that they would make an offer to them and the person did not have to fill anything out. They could simply click on a button that would take them to a landing page that would then ask them for information. So essentially they were providing a mechanism for them to either say, yes, I'm interested or not, and they could very quickly measure that. And when the person clicks on the button, it takes them to that landing page and then they can fill out information. So it becomes that 2-step process instead of a 1-step process.
Right. And this is actually something Clay Collins has talked about for years. And I heard it on his podcast he used to have called The Marketing Show. And then when he came on our show a couple years ago, well before the whole drip acquisition thing happened, he talked a lot about not popping something up, asking for information, and they go with this two-step opt-in, right? We could click a button and then the next step was a form, and that it just feels like it tends to have higher conversion rates, and it tends to make people feel more welcome and like you're not just asking for something right up front. So in this experiment, they point out for this to be successful, the conversion rate on the overlays would need to increase enough to offset the drop-off that they expect by adding that extra landing page step. Because you figure 1.25% of people might submit one, with the form fields in it. And maybe you get two or three times that to click the button, but now you need to get a lot of those folks to actually fill out the form on the landing page that's coming through. And so, not surprisingly, engagement with the overlays increased significantly, the ones with the buttons, and engagement is just clicks, right? And so the one with the form fields was 0.79%, and the ones with the just the button click through was 3.62%. So that's about 4.5 times better. And so that was just getting click-throughs. In the end, in their CRO category, the overlay with the button where you click through to the landing page, that essentially netted them twice the leads. So they doubled. They had 100% improvement in terms of the net leads that they received by having someone do a two-step opt-in instead of just popping up a form field in front of them. And in their lead gen category, they have this category on their blog, it was about a 50%. It was from 45 to 66. So a little under a 50% increase. And so they only did it in two categories, and their next step would be applying the same format to all the other categories and measuring the results. So two-step opt-in for the win.
Yeah. So if it's confusing to kind of consolidate that, it is a two-step process versus a one-step process. So depending on where you calculate the conversions for that, like you have to take those into account, and not just the percentages, but also the net result of it. So it's not just about the people who click on that link and then go to the next page. It's about who clicks on the link and goes to the next page and submits their information. And what is the net result of that versus the original? And in both cases here, they had either a 100% or a 50% increase, both of which are pretty significant, especially given the volume. And as it says, they took the time to say, okay, yes, this makes sense for us to kind of expand this and go out through the rest of our categories and implement it across the board.
And so that's where they leave off. I mean, they're kind of summarizing stuff that was ended 3 months ago, and I'm sure they're running their next test as we speak. The nice part about this, I liked they walk through really concrete examples. There's so much that you read about split testing that can be vague or can be rule of thumb. And these, your mileage may vary. It may not work for you exactly like this, but a lot of the stuff that they intuit really comes to pass. And I think that, it's always helpful to get ideas for your own split tests. You may not have time to create 10 different overlays. And unless you have 100,000 uniques a month to your blog, I wouldn't create 10 different overlays. But especially some of those earlier tests were pretty big wins for not a ton of effort, for writing a new headline and giving away a resource you probably already have sitting on your hard drive.
I'm sure QuickBooks is going to love you for saying Intuit all the time.
I know. I'm for using their intuition. Yeah. I'm going to come up in their Google alerts a bunch.
Yep. Their SEO guys are going to start calling you.
Yeah.
Interesting side note here. One of the things that Unbounce talks about is that they also have a list of what they're going to be looking at next. The first one is a trigger test, which is what happens when they test the on-exit trigger against a 15-second time delay. And then there's a referral test, which is what happens when they show different overlays to users from different traffic sources. And then the third one that they're looking at is new versus returning visitors. Do returning blog visitors convert better than first-time visitors? And I think those are all going to be interesting tests. If you're interested in taking a look at that, go over and check out Unbounce's website, subscribe to their blog. I'm sure they will post out the results when they get those, and it will be interesting to check it out.
While you're at it, go to the Lead Pages blog and subscribe too. They turn out good content like this as well. Got to plug the company, man.
I get it. Well, I think that about wraps us up. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.